Right. Tonight is our sixth class on the burning house, a Buddhist response to the climate and ecological emergency. And tonight's chapter is transforming anger. Just by a little bit of an announcement, this coming week, I will be in Minnesota visiting family. And Mark, and next Tuesday, will lead a discussion. So please show up to be supportive of his offering, but it will not be on the book. So just so you know, case because we and you can see on the Tuesday study, we've kind of shifted the chapters a little bit. So next week it will not be on that. It'll be on something else that'll stimulate good conversation, I hope. All right, and just in case you have not been with us for any of these classes, this book, this series, these classes, I have three guidelines to guide our discussion, three things that this class is not about. So this class is not about the climate and ecological emergency. I mean, it kind of is. But it's not about it in an objective sense. It's not informational. It's not about like sharing the latest news. We figure you have your own sources for that. It's not about practical solutions. So it's not about debating the relative merits of practical solutions. It's about how we cope with this reality and respond in a way that aligns with our aspiration as Buddhists. So, if you're going to mention something that you've chosen, a way you've chosen to live or chosen to do or not to do, just, make an I statement. I have chosen to do this. And try to stop short of blanket statements about what other people should do. So, in other words, when we're together, we don't talk the way that we do about this usually, right? In other settings, we probably talk pretty freely about what we think and what other people should do and all that. So, and then not complaining about other people, what they do and how they live. But learning how to try to hold our opinions with a measure of humility and maybe express them in ways that are honest but beneficial. So, given that, this evening, the chapter is Transforming Anger. And I really thought that I really liked the first section of this chapter. So I figured we would just read it together. And what usually works best is for to get a volunteer from the cloud to read it if you have a book and you are willing, because we can hear and see you very well. So I would just have you read about page and a half to 2 pages. Any volunteers in the cloud who happen to have your book in front of you, don't mind reading out loud. John. So you would start right from the beginning, including the Joanna Macy quote, and then go to the middle of page 123. Ending with the undermining our sense of interconnectedness.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
This is a dark time filled with suffering and uncertainty. Like living cells in a larger body, it is natural that we feel the trauma of our world. So don't be afraid of the anguish you feel or the anger you feel or fear, because these responses arise from the depth of your caring and the truth of your interconnectedness with all beings. Joanna Macy. Anger and hatred are very live issues in environmental activism. Like Greta Thunberg's, my anger is usually directed at politicians, whom I judge to be doing nothing, oil and coal companies, loggers, US citizens, as having the largest average national carbon footprint, and other wealthy people. In one sense, this anger is a distraction. I am no longer putting my attention on those who are suffering and how to alleviate their pain. Instead, I am caught up in how to punish those I believe to be responsible. Buddhaghosa, the famous 5th century Buddhist commentator, compared anger to a person picking up a burning ember or excrement to hit another. Whether or not they hit the other person, they first burn themselves or make themselves stink. So do Greta and I need anger management, as Donald Trump suggests. Is there really a problem with anger and hatred if they give us the energy to confront the causes of the problem? Isn't it better to get angry than to doze in our armchairs or privately seethe with resentment? It's important to distinguish between anger and hatred. Anger can have a protective function, or it may simply be a sudden release of frustrated energy. From karmic perspective, it may be neutral, just an intense feeling. You can feel anger in relation to someone without wishing to do them any harm. This intense energy can even be used skillfully. So anger is not entirely incompatible with metta, loving kindness, at least in the long run. If I look at my own emotional history, there's more of a danger of getting stuck in repressing strong feelings such as anger and desire. Ironically, where I wasn't aware of what I was actually feeling, this unawareness itself was probably unskillful. In addition, repressing strong feelings meant that I was alienated from my energy. As we shall see later in the chapter, repressed anger tends to become guilt, shame, and depression. It's no coincidence that I suffered as a teenager and in my 20s from deep depressions. In this depressive state, experiencing my anger might actually have been a step forward. Indeed, recontacting my emotions in a way I could, any way I could, was very important. As my Buddhist teacher, Urgyen Shangharshita, said in an aphorism, "Honest collusion is better than dishonest collusion." However, even if anger is not intended to harm anyone, it can be very unpleasant to receive and is likely to reduce trust and connection. So it's worth learning how to express it skillfully. Hatred, on the other hand, is a desire for another person's suffering. It is by definition unwholesome and will lead to suffering for oneself and others. Hatred is likely to arise from frustrated craving. When we don't get what we want, we hate what's in the way, or even turn to hating the object of our craving. It can also arise from an unacknowledged lack of self-value, a fear of what others may think of us, or a failure to take responsibility for our suffering. Through hatred, we become attached to our enemies just as strongly as if they were the objects of our craving. We simply can't do without them. We need regular fixes of hatred, for instance, by watching the news. According to the Dharma, hatred is the worst state of mind to get into because it isolates us from others, thereby undermining our sense of interconnectedness. It is certainly less wholesome than craving. Craving shows an affinity with life. Okay.
That's good. Thank you. So, quite a bit there. So, a bit on those Buddhist teachings about anger. He talked about Buddhaghosa and that. That resentment, I mean, hatred is the extreme, but it's seen as the opposite of metta or goodwill or loving kindness. So it was seen by the Buddha as like having this goodwill is a prerequisite for spiritual practice. So it's not just that it's good, it's nice, it means you're a nicer person, but also that you're not going to be able to meditate and, you know, have a calm mind and gain insight and stuff if you're unable to feel this goodwill toward people. So that Buddhaghosa's, he has a long list of things like, all right, so you're trying to feel goodwill, but you can't. So he has all these things that you can try, these like mental games. And so then he's saying, now just contemplate the fact that if you get angry, it's like picking up a coal and you throw it at somebody, or wishing harm upon them, but drinking poison in yourself. So it also is associated, anger and then hatred, with the hell realm. So there's the six realms of existence in the Buddhist cosmology. There's heaven and the human realm, realm of the jealous demigods, beast realm, hungry ghost realm, and in the hell realm, the most painful realm. It's seen that to get there, whether you want to talk about that kind of literally in a mythological sense or metaphorically, if you want to get there, you have said yes to hatred. Like you've said yes to that, like not just it arises right in a flash, like but you've actually gone down that path, and once you've got down that path, it's you have put yourself in a hell realm. And yet anger arises always as a sense that something needs to be protected. So I think one of the advantages, one of the evolutions of Buddhism over the last 50 to 100 years has been the introduction of a more psychological element to it. And in some ways you could say now we're just like translating it or changing it, but it's like we're peeling it open a little bit, right? Because we want to differentiate between that. I like the, using those terms, anger versus hatred, right? Anger can just arise. It can be a very natural and healthy thing. Sometimes anger is the not all, in a very rare occasion, anger is the best way to express something, right? Like it's more natural, or maybe that's the only thing that's going to get through. So interestingly, we have various wrathful deities. And this is one. This is Fudo, who stands in the back of our zendo, who is surrounded by flames. He's standing on a rock in the hell realm, and he's got a sword and a rope, and he's going to bind delusions and cut through them and free beings from their delusions. So there's quite a few. Especially in Vajrayana Buddhism, quite a few images of bodhisattvas who take a wrathful aspect. So it is acknowledged that it sometimes is important. This is a cute little book about the Dalai Lama, Be Angry. And in the intro, the publisher said, the Dalai Lama has observed, generally speaking, if a human being never shows anger, then I think something's wrong. He's not right in the brain. So, and I like there was something in the chapter two about Shantigarbha's point that is not always best or reasonable to expect ourselves or others to express themselves calmly. So I think this is a lot of stuff like if you've taken anything like awakening to whiteness or training about privilege and this sense that like we want complaints from marginalized folks to be like nice and calm and rational and not angry. It's just like, yeah, but after all this time, to expect that, to expect it all just to be done very calmly and diplomatically is a lot, right? So, tolerating a certain amount of anger is probably part of how we can be allies. And as he said, anger not acknowledged or dealt with, inwardly turned. Can be turned become resentment, passive aggressiveness, depression, yet selflessly, carelessly unleashed can cause great injury, undermine trust. So we say in our precept on anger, we say do not indulge anger. Now there are like kind of the original what's translation of do not be angry, but what do you mean by that? Maybe being angry means manifesting that anger, speaking it. So we do not indulge it, but we're not saying that it doesn't arise. So Shantigarbha took us through, he's also involved with nonviolent communication, and he took us through a process to acknowledge and then transform our anger. So the first step being to stop and breathe. So this is when anger arises. Two, to get fully in touch with what you're feeling, including in the body, to really become aware of it. Three, listen compassionately for associated thoughts, feeling this way, and then I'm thinking this. Four, get in touch with the needs behind the thoughts. So the really, fundamental, basic, like you can't argue with it, need, right? I have a need for a sense of safety. I have a need for love and affection. I have a need for respect. I have a need for et cetera. So getting in touch with the needs behind your needs behind the thoughts. And then notice the transformed feeling. Usually this turns us from anger, this something needs to be protected, to, sometimes hurt or sadness or fear. That's what's underneath. And then I would kind of don't, I'm not familiar with nonviolent communication that much. So like then make a request to yourself, he said. But I guess I read this as, what's something you can do in this moment to meet some of those needs for yourself or acknowledge them. So really, this is that's a lovely way to describe this process, but it's just a, to me, it's just a systematic, explicit description of the process that we try to do in practice in a more just kind of organic, natural way. Just turning the light within, becoming aware, centering ourselves in our breath, and trying to not just become aware of what's in the moment, but like all of it, what's underneath it. So, I thought it might be, if you don't mind indulging me, the guided meditation for this chapter, I thought was interesting and might provide us with some not theoretical fodder for discussion. So it's only 10 minutes. And I think I'll be able to share my sound. Hold on. So there's no visuals, obviously. It's just the audio. All right, so you can close your eyes if you like or whatever.
Transforming enemy images. Part of the process of labeling and pigeonholing people is to create hostile or enemy image of them. It's the mental equivalent of a visual caricature used for target practice. relating to the image rather than the person makes it easier for us to dehumanize them, and so to justify violence towards them. Here is a guided reflection to help us transform these kinds of hostile or enemy images. Apart from reducing the violence in the world, this exercise allows us to reclaim a portion of our own humanity. Take a moment to settle into your posture, whether sitting or lying down. Let the mind rest in the body as the body rests on the cushion, chair, or floor. Coming into your heart, sensing what you're feeling right now. Is it light or heavy, expansive or contracted? And underneath this, what are you longing for? What's your heart's wish? When you're ready, recall a specific time when you felt separate from someone with whom you have an ongoing relationship. Notice who it was. When and where were you? What happened in the moments just before you felt separate? Using all your senses, create a rich first-person experience, imagining the scene in your imagination. And as you do this, notice and allow your physical sensations and emotions. Make a mental note of your judgments of the other person. And taking one or two of these judgments, identify your feeling and need underlying each judgment. How are you now? Give yourself permission to feel what you feel now. What needs are alive in this moment? Savor your needs. Now, recalling the scene again, Guess what the other person may have been saying yes to. What need could they have been trying to meet? From their point of view, how were they trying to enrich their life? That doesn't mean you agree with how they were trying to enrich it. It doesn't mean that you agree with their worldview. Just connecting with how they were trying to enrich their life. Savor this need within you, its importance to you and everyone. Consider the idea that, just like me, this person was doing the best they could to get their needs met. If they knew a way to meet the need with less cost, they would choose that. How are you now? Give yourself permission to feel what you feel now. What needs are alive in this moment? Savor your needs. If you notice judgments of the other person coming up again, let this step go and return to the previous step of self-empathy. It's hard to have empathy for another when you're needing it for yourself. To conclude this exercise, what is one step that you can take right now that serves the needs you've identified, both your own and the other person's?
Well, I hope that was hope that was interesting. I know guided meditations aren't for everybody, but I'm just gonna, let that sit and inform what we talk about. Want to read a little bit from another piece from this Dalai Lama book about anger versus hatred. To use anger as a motivating force, should we transform it into another state, into something positive, or should we maintain it as it is? The answer to this question is a person's state of mind, That is the motivation that causes the action. When we act, the act arises out of a cause that already exists in us. If we act when our inner motivation is hatred toward another person, then that hatred expressed as anger will lead to destructive action. This is negative action. But if we act out of consideration for the other person, if we are motivated by affection and sympathy, then we can act out of anger because we are concerned for that person's well-being. This is a tall order. But what else are we doing here as practitioners, right? Having aspirations. So, and share something different. Do a little brainstorm here about what happens when anger develops into hatred. And I think we can talk about, you know, real hatred, but I think there's also a little bit of a scale here, right? That, you know, in the instance I was thinking about during that meditation, there was a, I mean, it's not that I, you know, I got to like long time hatred of this other person, but there's a definite resentment, like lack of goodwill, like you know, that was creeping in there, that was very different than I could imagine, like having my heart open, expressing my needs, finding out what this other person's needs are. You know, I could imagine that happening, but it would be very difficult to do that when I was essentially angry, right? So wondering if people wanted to chime in. Let's see. Let me see as many Zoom people as I can. What happens when anger develops into hatred? Like what's your sense of when, you know, here's a natural feeling arises, something needs to be protected. Like this is something you could actually act out of. It could give you some energy. But then when it starts to slide down into that unwholesome phenomenon. So those in the cloud, you could either raise your hand, virtual hand. I can't see everybody, so you'd have to raise your virtual hand or maybe just unmute yourself. Leah.
Yeah, so I was thinking in the instance I was meditating upon that I felt more closed, like I was turning away from the person that I was thinking of, like I was mentally turning around and away and not listening to them anymore.
Isaac,
should I come up with it?
Or speak really loud?
I'll just come up. Just it's short. So I was just thinking about ruminating thoughts that are carried with me, even in the practice. Just kind of mulling it over. Mm-hmm.
John.
Yeah, this is probably before hatred, but when you see a situation, and in the meditation it was, looking at my need and the source of that and their need, there's feelings of wanting to control the situation and wanting to control the situation in the favor of your need. And so if you're basically, controlling the situation toward your need and not them, not their need, it's maybe not hatred yet, but it's something.
How about I'll change it to slides toward. Because it's just kind of a seems like a spectrum. Tyler.
Yeah, I think when it moves to hatred, maybe your ability to see that other person or their humanity, like there seems to be like a change in your view of their humanity.
Susan.
I would think if I hate someone, I just never want to see them again.
The you don't want to engage anymore. You just
No,
yeah.
that's it.
Let's see. Jen.
I think it takes a lot of energy to hold the other person's needs and like to keep your mind open enough to know that both of you are happy, that I think it's true to hold their humanity and your humanity at the same time. And I feel like when you just get tired, you try to go towards hatred. It feels like it's going to be easier just to say, they're not like me. I don't have to consider their.
Let's see, Rachel and then Yoli. Go ahead,
It's
Rachel.
easier. Hi. It's easier to blame someone. Like, they're always pointing out their faults and flaws and finding blame.
It's a simpler story for sure. Yoli.
I think hatred puts up walls. Almost like you're walled off and you can't see past that. You can't see, doesn't allow you to understand or hear what other people have to say.
Cassie.
I would say that for me, anger feels much different in my body than hatred. So anger can be, it's very like almost invigorating, very motivating. There's a lot of action for me in anger. More like from my hair. Hatred is a, for me, a sick feeling, where it turns inward and like you're more of a paralysis situation. You're just very stuck. Like somebody mentioned, like this rumination, like this looping and it kind of all that. That it turns inward. It's very sick and it's a whole body experience. And there's really nowhere to go from there, right? Like, whereas anger, we can do some things, right? So, yeah. So it's, I think it's like a body experience for me where it shifts.
Andrew.
I was going to mention earlier, and this is a good time to say it since I have the chance as well, is that Claude Anj and Thomas often distinguishes between anger and rage, which is an interesting way to think about it, at least for me. So I would say that when anger moves to hatred, and you could also say that anger moves into very possibly rage. And the reason that that probably feels, as Cassie said, like a sick feeling in the body is because also once you move into rage, you're also moving into the imbalance of the autonomic nervous system and into sympathetic fight or flight. So there's all types of things, physiological and mental, that can happen when anger slips into.
Let's see. Go, Chris, Courtney, and then you. It's like another. Let's go on. Okay, Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, I think when you start giving into hatred, you really are turning away from compassion, and not just as it's focused on whatever the object of your hatred is, but you're really letting go of compassion as a, you know, kind of a larger thing. And you're really throwing your lot in with the idea of something being separate from you. Like you're really throwing into that delusion of self, because you're putting this thing in this other category, this object of hate.
Thank you. Who is Courtney?
I think I find that hatred helps feed and maintain anger. That hatred actually feeds back into anger and keeps it alive.
Yeah, there's something about like, this, I think this is another thing the Dalai Lama said at one point, that like anger lasts like a few seconds. Like it arises, and then if it continues, we've held on to it, done something to it. And yeah, when you go down that road, it's totally like self-reinforcing, right? I don't know who's next. Doesn't look like there's any hands up in the cloud anymore. I think thought there was one, but Courtney, go ahead.
Sorry for jumping in the chair too. I didn't mean to cut in line. I'm not proud of this, but this has really only happened to me once, where I really started feeling resentment towards somebody. But I found myself trying to like get people on my side, like covertly, like now I'm talking smack about this person. I want other people to agree with me, and I want people to think that this person I'm feeling resentment towards is not a good person. I don't really have words for that, but
yeah, it's like to me it feels like, you know, it's like making a case. And I think that's why our precept on anger talks about do not contrive reality for the self. I mean, I have gotten really, my thing is getting really upset on behalf of others because of a perceived injustice. I mean, I don't like injustice that I feel like I'm victim of either, but I feel extra righteous when it's on behalf of others, right? And so I will just be like, oh my goodness, you know, Yoli, your situation, I just want to come in on my white horse, and like, I want to, and I just like, I got a whole vision of what's going on here. And I think I'm getting to the point now where I can recognize that, oh, okay, well, let's check in with the situation. See, like, how's Yoli, how are you doing? You know, because a lot of times it's just like, I'm fine. Okay. You know, so this whole reality that we can get so upset about may or may not really reflect what's going on. It's funny. So I just want to, this is all very interesting, but I'm gonna make a statement here, because to kind of bring this back to this whole, like, you know, what does this have to do with the climate and ecological crisis and other difficult things in our world today? Just make this statement, and then we can kind of reflect on, make comments, whatever. Anger may at times be appropriate. Something or someone may need protection, and it gives us access to the energy to do something about it. Hatred is never appropriate, no matter who someone is or what they have done. It poisons us, and it makes any kind of positive resolution impossible. And I think, based on my own experience, my own confession, that, I mean, I don't experience that like intense hatred, but if we're talking about as kind of as a spectrum, I definitely see people on the other side of many issues from myself as just being like, you are no, it's unacceptable. You are like so wrong and out of it that I can't. Yeah, like there's definitely a wall. There's definitely a block. Like I don't want to have anything to do with you, right? We mentioned that. I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see you. I want to pretend you don't exist. When I have to deal with the fact that you exist, I'm just going to get together with my friends and talk about how awful you are. And I mean, it's a tough thing because in our world, we do have to force through. There's certain things we just have to force through. I always think about civil rights and like, if we waited until everybody was like, sure, let's integrate the schools, like, never would have happened. So like, sometimes you just gotta force stuff through. You gotta force regulations through and whatever, but really, we can only force stuff so much as long as we're seeing the other side as, we're vilifying the other side. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of answers for like, how do you translate this aspiration practically, right? How do we start living and doing this more practically speaking, not just theoretically, to really try not to other those who oppose us, or like you said at the beginning of the chapter, those who we think are responsible. Leave it there for comments. Cool.
Ruth Ann.
Oh, and Ruth Ann, did you have something you wanted to add?
Oh, yes, thank you for this. For me, some political figures that are in the news all the time, I lose their humanity. I can't say if it's hatred. I just couldn't physically even be in the same room with them or ask them a question other than how do they sleep at night? I'm curious. But I don't see their humanity. And in the guided meditation, what initially was anger, almost perhaps a bit of fear, initially for my safety, perhaps just turned to sadness because the communication wasn't there. There was no reason to hang on to anger, just almost a grave disappointment that connections weren't so easy. But I don't know, hanging on to anger just turns within and is a dead-end street. Thank you for this.
Yeah. Thank you. Leah, and then.
Yeah, we did a little bit of this working against anger, working against hatred as opposed to anger, and resolving issues within Extinction Rebellion when I was a member of that. And the technique we used is called empathy circles, where you get together with people on the other side of your whatever it is issue, and then you all listen to each other. You take turns listening to them state their case, kind of, but it's supposed to be more like, well, this is really deeply how I feel, and then have everybody listen to their honesty and then take turns. And meanwhile, you have two witnesses, it's like four people anyway. But that, I think, gets to it's very hard to do. Whenever it was done, it was mildly successful, I guess. But it is really, really hard to do because just sitting in front of a person that you really, really disagree with, some sort of fundamental issue is just so hard. And it's so hard to listen because the whole time they're talking, you're just like, I got to listen to exactly what they are actually saying and not my own internal thoughts about why they're so horrible. You know, it's actually really, really hard to make that little shift. So admittedly, but when it did actually happen, I was like, wow, this has promise. So yeah, anyway.
And part of that was, as you were the a listener, you had to periodic, they would stop periodically and you had to repeat back what they said.
It's called
Right.
hearing.
So you could not listen.
So
You
you
had
couldn't, you
to
actually,
listen.
and then to like find your, so what you're saying is that you felt
Yeah,
that
this making
actually
the
have to
space.
come out of your mouth.
Yes.
Yeah, very hard. Did you? Yeah.
Should I come up?
Yeah, do it.
Oh, Jennifer, almost, this is what I was going to mention a couple of weeks ago, and I think it's perfectly good. You'll know what I mean almost immediately. I'm trying to think of a quick and succinct way to say this. So a couple of weeks ago, I watched a documentary about, and I think this is really relevant to the topic here and where it concerns othering people and feeling like you can't sit in the same room with them and you can't talk to them because they've gone and pissed you off now and you can't work with them and you can't ever want to see them again and all this stuff, which is a very natural response that all of us experience. However, I watched this documentary a few weeks ago about the fairly early days of the HIV and AIDS crisis with ACT UP and how they dealt with getting drugs out to save people's lives. Now, these were people who were dying in the immediate. These were people who were losing people almost on a daily basis. And they had to somehow dig down deep and find a way to sit in rooms directly across from people that they were so enraged at that they could hardly stand it. And had they not been able to get to that point, thousands, millions of other people would have died because the result of them being able to sit across from someone that they absolutely could not stand and thought that they couldn't work with, the end result of that was getting drugs approved faster for people. And so I think it's a case study in this is, I mean, it's really relevant to this topic because if we go into shutdown mode and we cannot bring ourselves to discuss things with people that we really can't stand, then I mean it's pretty much pretty much in the discussion there. It's not, it's just, it's never going to work. And I don't think that, I just thought that that was just a great case study and really relevant to what we're talking about.
And I think, you know, we, and by we, I mean, I don't shouldn't make assumptions about everybody here, but many of us, kind of white, middle class, liberal culture, right? And, you know, there's many times when I hear and see things and I think, you know, we are responsible for half of the culture war. You know, and we don't perceive it that way, right? And they don't perceive themselves that way, right? It's like, but when whoever is right about a given issue, I mean, I'm right about all the issues. Like, if I say, you know, you are a despicable human being because of the things that you do and the things that you believe, like, what is your response to that? Your response is going to be, you know,
There's not going to, there's not
to
going to
put
be
up a similar
there's not
wall.
going to be a discussion.
And now I am the evil one. And now, well, it's 9 o'clock. I should wrap it up. Very juicy conversation, though. Thank you all for being here. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Hey, Domio.
Yeah.